south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, 4th of July is over. Did you have a good time? You know, lots of people down here in Latin America, I'm talking about gringos and expats, of course, celebrate the 4th of July. Why, you might ask, since we all voted with our feet and got the hell out of Dodge? Well, I guess most of us, the unwoke ones anyway, are celebrating what America used to be like, what we knew it as when we were kids. But I'll tell you, man, most of us who aren't woke, we still love that country or what it used to be, but we hate our government. And to most, I'd say 99.9% of all gringos and expats, it's still our country. Why? Because we have either U.S. passports or Canadian. Yep, lots of Canadian listeners to this show. Lots of Europeans, Australians too. Now, once again, at the risk of repeating myself, I have to warn you that there are lots of woke gringos and expats who come down here. But you rarely meet them off the gringo tourist trail. On the trail, there are heavy concentrations of them. So look out if you plan to live on or near the tourist trail. Many of them, it seems, exhibiting their toxic wokeism on Facebook, Twaddle, and various blog sites. And most of them, surprise, surprise, are ex-government workers, ex-government contractors, and ex-school teachers. Funny thing, too, as far as school teachers, you rarely meet a school teacher down here that didn't work for a government school because, you know, the private school teachers don't get paid half as much as they do. So when they retire or near retirement, they can't afford to pick up and leave, like those public school teachers who've got twice the pension. Not fair, but life ain't fair. But not all government workers are woke. There is a very large contingent of government workers, absolutely the opposite. And wouldn't you know it, they're almost exclusively guys and gals who serve in the armed forces. Why do you think that is? How'd that happen? Do they know something other government workers don't know, maybe? By the way, there's one thing I forgot to mention on a previous show when I was talking about how so many Latin American narcos and crooked politicians are buying up Miami. You have to wonder, how did they get their dirty money out of the country without raising lots of red flags? Obviously, the banks in Miami are in on it, or they're looking the other way a lot. I mean, look, how do you justify $1 million or multi-million-dollar wire transfer coming out of Panama or Colombia just to buy a piece of property in Miami Beach? A lot of times, too, sight unseen. They're buying Miami properties without even a walkthrough. Well, speaking with one former Miami realtor who's living down here in Latin America now, he says they used to bring suitcases of cash into his office. But he said that was in the 80s and 90s, before all that f***ed up, and I mean it is f***ed up, know your customer bullshit, which makes life infinitely more difficult for normal people like you and me. That assumes, of course, that we are normal, whatever that is. Meanwhile, even with the banks, know your customer's a dirtbag law, those million-dollar Miami properties keep getting snapped up. So in reality, even though the banks know their customers are narcos, crooked politicians, and other dirtbags, hell, all they got to do is look it up on the web or check out the board of directors on the company that's writing the check. Never mind that the dirtbags get around the loopholes, while it adversely affects normal people just trying to do things legally. But you knew that already and probably have been caught up in it too. Just try to take a couple of grand out of your bank account in cash. They'll ask a lot of questions. You might not get it for a day or two. Besides that, behind your back, they'll write you up as a suspicious transaction. You'll be on a government shit list and you won't even know it. Anyway, a couple of months ago, I was talking to a real estate broker who specializes in the area of Punta Cana in Dominican Republic. You may have been there yourself. That's a big-time tourist and resort area. There's got to be 100 different all-inclusive hotels on the beach. Some of them like their own little cities. I'm not kidding you about that. Anyway, this lady who'd been in the business for 20 or so years, she said in the old days, in the 90s through about 2005 or 10, she said Russian and Ukrainian guys would arrive with suitcases full of cash to buy properties. She said she had many personal stories where a couple of guys walked into their real estate office on closing day, not with a check, but with a couple of boxes full of cash. She said it made the whole office kind of nervous. Can't do that anymore, but that did happen a lot in the old days, she said. That's right, she called 2005, 2010 the old days. By the way, as far as a plan B for gringos and expats in the area of Punta Cana, Dominican Republic, I wouldn't recommend it. It's total tourism and expensive. Though a fantastic place to visit for a week or two, because you can get an all-inclusive hotel for something like $130 to $170 a night for two. That's double occupancy in the off-season. But forget about Easter and Christmas. That's considered the high season and rates double. So it boils down to this. It's fantastic if you stay at an all-inclusive resort because everything's covered. Though as soon as you take a walk off the property into the little towns and barrios around there, it's first-world prices all the way, more than first-world prices. In fact, if you take a cab, yeah, they have Ubers, but mostly taxis. They have a number of different Uber-like services, too, but if you come down as a tourist, you'll never know that. By the way, in every Latin American country that has Uber, they've got some heavy competition with Uber-like services that you'll never know about unless you visit and ask around. And practically all of them are cheaper than taxis and Ubers. However, it's almost always the case, the less you pay, the crappier the ride. Most people, by the way, have the Uber app for up in the States. Down here, it's in Spanish. Anyway, if you land at the Punta Cana airport and you take a taxi, most people do that. They're 3 to 4 times as expensive as taking the same kind of ride if you're in the big capital city of Santo Domingo, which is about 3 or 3.5 hours away by car. Now, that's a place I recommend for gringos and expats. Santo Domingo. There are hardly any gringos and expats there at all. That's if you like city living. I don't get it. It's really cool. It's got everything except gringos and expats. Of course, there are a few gringos and expats here and there, but it's one of those places you can be deep in the big city, walk around all day, and never see another one. Now, you might think that's rather odd because so many people visit the DR for the beaches. Yet, you could walk around all day in the biggest city, Santo Domingo, with over 4 million people and not see a single gringo. How do you explain that? It's as if the DR has two cultures living in it, separated geographically by about a 3.5 hour drive. That's two cultures. A regular, normal, workaday Latin culture and a tourism culture. So 99.9% of all tourists, instead of flying into the airport in Santo Domingo, which is maybe about a 1/2 hour from the big city, they choose to fly into the airport at Punta Cana, which is only 10 or 15 minutes from their hotel, their resort. You get it? People are flying in to go to those beautiful beach resorts. And if you fly into the Santo Domingo airport, it's a 3.5 hour drive away. Who's going to do that? So if you're working on your plan B and you like city life, it wouldn't hurt to check out Santo Domingo, though it's very hot. Though for all you gringos and expats who want to live out in the boonies, homestead, whatever, or live closer to or in a small town or village, the DR would not be my first choice. Which begs the question, why would you even want to leave an all-inclusive resort, go out to the neighborhood shopping malls and restaurants, which are first world expensive or more, when everything, and I mean everything, is covered at your all-inclusive joint? Search me, but I've noticed a lot of expensive restaurants, water parks, and events on the adjacent roads going into the small towns and villages nearby. Believe it or not, they've even got a permanent, or semi-permanent anyway, Cirque du Soleil, just like in Vegas. You know, with all the big, colorful circus tents and all those acrobats and performers, yeah, they got the entire Cirque du Soleil company set up just 10 minutes from the Punta Cana resorts. And to get in, that'll cost you at least $50 a head, right? That should give you an idea of how commercialized that place has become. Personally, not my style. So it's definitely not the locals going to those places, it's the people staying at the resorts. They're the only ones who could afford to drop that kind of dough. In fact, they've got restaurants around there that if you're out with your wife or husband or significant other or on a date, it could cost you $150 to $200 easy. You might be all right with that, but I'm not. Not when 3 or 4 hours away, you could go to a really nice restaurant in Santo Domingo and pay $50 for a really nice couple's dinner. Though, I don't know if those numbers are quite right these days. I haven't been there in a while. Who knows, with inflation on fire everywhere in the world now, it's not so easy to pin down those cost of living numbers like we used to do. Meanwhile, you've got Dr. Fauci and those bureaucratic NIH and WHO ass wipes who've never done any real research in their lives that wasn't supported by Big Pharma. You know how that turns out. Wouldn't you know it, they're whipping up another frenzy with this monkeypox thing. If you ask me, it's a simple case of monkey shaming. Think about it. Don't monkey lives matter too? Especially if you're woke. Hey, hey, we're the Monkees. What would Mickey Dolan say? Now, suppose you wake up one morning and you believe in your heart that you're a monkey, which begs the question, what are the proper monkey pronouns? And where is a good dependable clinic to get monkey hormones and monkey transition surgery? I think I'll check on the net to see who Biden and his cabinet members use. By the way, the science shows that monkeypox spreads mostly through skin-to-skin contact at places like rave parties and orgies. Well, you can call me old-fashioned, you can call me a prude, but I think if you invite a monkey to your orgy and you get the pox, I can't feel sorry for you. But I digress as usual. Let's dig into the email pile. This one comes from Mr. K. He says, Johnny, we're talking about the intensity of the sun in Latin America and using sunscreen on a previous show and how it causes skin cancer in lots of people. Then he sends me a link. He says, Johnny, you wouldn't believe it. I found the following snippet on a Telegram group, supposedly written by a physician. What he says is the same that you said on your podcast about the sun and sunscreens. But the interesting part are the two last lines, as he says that people in submarines have a higher skin cancer rate than people on regular warships. Should be just the opposite, because it's the sailors on deck getting all that sun. Then he says, even though this may suggest that skin cancer may have other causes besides the sun, there can be multiple reasons for it. Perhaps low vitamin D, artificial light in submarines, stress, excessive sunbathing afterwards, and getting burnt when they surface after being underwater for weeks, even months at a time. Who knows, but I thought you might find that interesting. Then he says, Johnny, I finally did it. I moved down to Guatemala permanently after coming back and forth a few times to check it out. For me, it's been about a 6-year process. All right, me, Johnny here. You see, sometimes it takes people that long to get their ducks in a row so they can leave permanently. Then he says, Johnny, as for haggling with the locals, here's my experience coming from a newbie. The funny thing is that we found out that lots of sellers really do want to haggle with you. When I say me, it's me and my girlfriend who also came down. And even more important, over time, you get better understanding of their answers when you're haggling. You do get some valuable information. You get better and better at it. There are some sellers, though, that really try to rip you off and don't change the price when it's obvious that it's too high. He says, for example, the other day we were looking for leeches. By the way, leeches are a red-colored tropical fruit with little barbs sticking out of them, about the size of a small egg. You crack them open, the center falls out, and you suck on that like a big lemon drop, a really big lemon drop. Anyway, he says, I asked about the price of leeches from the seller. She didn't respond right away. She was thinking a bit. But I noticed the local had just bought a bag from her for about 75 cents. And then she blurted out her price, $1.25. In the local money, Quetzales. And she wouldn't budge, even though the guy before me paid a lot less. And when I started to haggle, I said 75 cents. She preferred to let us walk. She wouldn't budge. However, just today, our favorite piña seller, that's pineapple, treated us fair as usual. He always charges us the very same price as he charges the locals, as I've seen him do a number of times with my own eyes. He said, today at the market, I tried to haggle a little more after hearing your inspirational podcast. And well, about 10% lower in price was about the best I could get. Then he says, there are little tricks that you learn, though. We found out if you visit the Antigua Guatemala market on the market day Monday, Thursday, or Saturday, and go to the open space in the back, you usually get the best deals, and oftentimes, especially veggies, are so cheap that I feel awkward haggling about them. All right, me, Johnny here. You know, Mr. K says today, that'd be a couple of days ago now, 10% was the best he could haggle people down at the market. Well, my response is, yes, you will get better at it, Mr. K. And it's always the case. The more Spanish you know, the lower your cost of living. It'll help you in so many other ways, too. The only place it won't help is when you're dealing with the cops, when you get pulled over. If you no hablo español, you'll have the advantage if you don't speak Spanish or pretend you don't speak Spanish, especially when you're south of the border. South of Mexico, because, you know, in Mexico, the cops know enough English to extort from you. You see, south of Mexico, the cops know almost no English. That means when you tell them you don't know any Spanish, no hablo español, they're more than likely to wave you right on by. It's happened to me a number of times. Yeah, I know, I speak Spanish well enough anyway, maybe 80%. But still, when I get pulled over by the cops, my fallback default position is no hablo español. Actually, it's more gringoized. I say no hablo Spanish. It's gotten me out of so many jams. Though one time when I was in Panama, I got pulled over and the cop whipped out his Google Translate app. Tell you the truth, I was surprised he had internet service on his phone. You know, anybody can get Wi-Fi. It's free wherever you go. But when you're on the highway, there's no Wi-Fi, right? That means the guy had to have some kind of phone and data plan, which, by the way, I'd say at least 50% of Latinos don't even have, or have just intermittently when they can afford it. They just rely on Wi-Fi at home or wherever they go, because you have to keep on recharging a phone if you're going to use regular phone service, which the average Latino will do, but when the time runs out, because you buy it for 1, 2, 3, 5 days or whatever, they just use the Wi-Fi connection at home or elsewhere. Depending on the money situation, they may wait a day or two or three before they recharge their regular plan. Of course, all upper middle class and upscale Latinos have a permanent phone plan, but that's less than 10% of the adult population. Now, if you don't have a fixed plan meaning signing a contract with the phone or internet company, which means you have to give up all your debts unless you have someone else do it for you, a local. If you do like me and many other expats too, and the middle and lower classes here, it's the pay-as-you-go plan. Like, for example, if I buy 7 days of internet with 8 gigs download, it costs $3 or $4. That means around $16 to $20 a month. What I do is load maybe $20 at a time in their funny money into the phone, and when the time runs out and the phone sends me a little message, I just recharge it right there. But most Latinos, I've seen them do this at the stores where you charge your phone. They buy a day or a couple of days worth for $2 or $3. They're not loading up their phones with credit, though they could. They just don't have the dough to do that. Not when the average person makes $300 to $400 a month. And believe me, Latinos are feeling the squeeze of this inflation push too. I've noticed it myself at all the markets. Now, I mentioned this phone and internet bit because Mr. K in his email talks about almost anonymous internet in Guatemala. He says, Johnny, whereas both big providers in Guatemala, the two big services, want your travel passport and a credit card, there is a new player in town called Innova, I-N-N-O-V-A. They use fiber optics and promise a much more stable and faster connection, but they're almost double the price of Tigo and Claro, the other two services, without any TV or such extras included. But they only wanted my name and my passport number, which can be accidentally misspelled and misnumbered. And of course, because it's a contract service, you'll have to give your address for obvious reasons, because it'll install a wired modem in your house. But you could pay at one of the local banks with cash. So as contract services go, it's as anonymous as it can be. All right, me, Johnny here. Yeah, you know, some people need to have that contract service if they want a wired internet into their home. Of course, you could always buy one of those little modem boxes. You may have seen those things. They're no bigger than a pack of cigarettes and have their own internal battery supply if you're not plugged in to a USB outlet. I've seen a lot of taxi and Uber drivers use those things. Why do you think that it is? Well, then they don't have to buy internet service, fixed service for their house, and while in the car too, because you could just slip that thing in your pocket or put it on your dashboard and have internet service anywhere, including your house. A while back, I was using one of those things, in fact, for a couple of years. And since their mobile device is not installed in your house, you can give any address you want, and you can send your cleaning lady or maintenance guy out to buy it for you. That way, it's in their name, not yours. Same thing with regular cell phone service. If you really want to be anonymous, just ask your cleaning lady or maintenance guy. They'll gladly sign you up for the service using their cedula. By the way, if you think that's an abuse of power, I found out they never balk. They're glad to help you out. In fact, no one's on the hook. If the bill doesn't get paid, they just shut off the service. So it's no skin off their backs. They're just helping out their employer. Now, Mr. K is a man after my own heart. He's a gun owner, and he's got this to say about concealed carry, shooting clubs, and well, everything that goes along with having guns in Guatemala in this case. He says, I know that lots of expats are into having guns. So I found a great shooting range just outside of Antigua near St. Lucia. Well, if you have your own gun, you pay $10 to get in. And you can buy a box of 50 9mm bullets for around $30. About a third higher than the States, where it costs about $18 to $20 for a box of 50. Then he says, Johnny, for your listeners, it might be interesting to note that owning a weapon in Guatemala is quite easy. You just get residency and then get up to 3 guns, rifles, shotguns, whatever. Then you have 72 hours to transport them home to their permanent destination. Because, you see, without a concealed carry license, you need always to have permission to move the guns, and you're given 72 hours to do that. He says, for me, this is almost paradise. Let's see. Me, Johnny, here again. Let me guess, he must be from Canada or maybe Australia. though he never said good day, Johnny, so I guess that narrows it down. He says, Johnny, I prefer to have more than one gun. I know it's probably more than I could use, but I hope to never use them at all. It's just nice to know you have the option. Then he says, as far as getting a concealed carry license permit, there is an option for that too. You have to take a test in writing. I assume it's in Spanish. And then there's an oral test and a practical shooting test at 12 meters. I got all the materials from my teacher. Yes, I'm taking classes and currently I'm working through it. So hopefully in around 4 weeks, we should get our residency done and then head over to the gun store. Then he asks, Johnny, you have any recommendations which handgun and caliber I should get? Our teacher likes a Sig Sauer 320 the most and a Glock 19 next. And a friend of mine recommends a Heckler Koch handgun or the Walther brand. And I'm stuck. I don't know. All right, Mr. K. Here's my opinion. I personally like to have three guns at home. A cheap 12-gauge pump like a Mossberg. I'm guessing at the gun store they're around $300 to $500 depending what Latin country you're in. Now, there are certain Latin American countries that don't allow guns at all, and if they do, they're so restrictive, you have to jump through so many hoops, you'll just never get one. For example, Cuba, Nicaragua, and Venezuela. And why would they? They're run by dictators. Dictators don't like the public having guns. But that's also true of Mexico and Colombia. Two more very good reasons why I don't recommend them as Plan B destinations. Isn't it funny? The two free Latin American countries, the ones that don't have dictators, with the largest drug production stats and organized gang members and narcos, don't allow their citizens and residents to have a gun for home protection. Colombia and Mexico. But hey, you North Americans, are you reading the tea leaves? Very strict gun laws, if not the total outlawing of guns, is coming to a city near you. You know what they say, you get the government you deserve and you voted for those dickheads. Meanwhile, all those congressmen who take your gun rights away, they have their own armed bodyguards, don't they? Anyway, if you're not a gun nut, you just want guns for home protection like me. In other words, going to the shooting club or shooting gallery is not your pastime. It's not your hobby. You know, you just want to have a little insurance policy around the house. You get a cheap 12-gauge pump shotgun. You don't get a semi-auto. Not only are they twice as expensive, I had a Remington semi-auto back in the States for duck hunting. It jammed on me a couple times. Well, those pump-action shotguns will not jam. Not to mention they've got that cliche cinematic sound when you pump them. And when bad guys hear that, they know what's coming next. The second gun I recommend for protection around the house, again, if it's not a hobby and you don't go out to the shooting range, is a revolver, like a .357 Taurus. A cheap gun from Brazil, but man, does it pack a punch. That is, if it's a .357. Revolvers are cheap, and they never jam. Unlike a Glock 6-Hour Beretta, and the other semi-auto guns Mr. K mentions in his email. And those name brands coming from Germany or Austria that Mr. K mentions will cost you well over a grand. Twice what they'd cost up in the States. We're talking $1,000 or more. But why a .357? It's one of the most powerful rounds out there. They're so loud. You just shoot it once. It's deafening. Even your average Rottweiler or Pitbull will cower and slink into its cage. That's what you're trying to do, of course. Scare the would-be bad guys away. The sound of the pop-pop from a .32 caliber might not, but the sound of a .357, that'll scare anyone. The other thing is, you really should train up your wife or significant other to be able to use guns. Especially a shotgun. They're so easy to use, you practically don't need any training at all. It's the best multi-purpose home protection gun. You don't have to be accurate at all. You just point it in the general direction. The third gun I recommend, if you're not a sportsman, is pretty much optional. You don't want one unless you've got plenty of space to shoot it. I'm talking about a rifle that shoots 22 long rounds. Expat Eddie's from Texas, you know, and he calls a 22 long rifle a varmint gun. Anyway, the 22 caliber rounds are much less than half the price of the larger 9mm slugs that most handguns use, like a Glock or a Sig Sauer. By the way, those expensive brand name guns out of Europe, like the Walther that Mr. K talks about, you know, the Walther was James Bond's gun of choice, and Hitler had one on him at all times, too. Did you know that? Anyway, plunking away with a .22 caliber rifle is the cheapest way to practice. And if you're really into economy, you could even load it up with 22 short rounds just for target practice. They're even cheaper than the 22 longs, though it's not for indoor, apartment, or city living. That's for sure. It's for target practice, shooting at cans, etc. But you have to have a big yard, of course, out in the boonies where there are not many neighbors around. So Unless you're on a decent plot of land, you won't have a chance to plunk around with it. Now, the odd thing is, in many Latin countries, Guatemala included, you can't buy a scope for your rifle. They're illegal. How about that? But oddly enough, if you order one from Amazon, and I ordered a cheap one, $25, it came through just fine. How'd that happen? All I know is that because they're illegal, you can't buy them in any gun store, here in Latin America anyway. So then you might wonder, who's minding the store? Who's checking? Well, no one. This is Latin American, you know. And since guns are twice as expensive here in Latin America than they are up in the States, you put two and two together and you realize governments make a hell of a lot of money legally by taxing firearms at 100% or more. They'll do the same to you if you've got your own guns up in the States and try to ship them down, which is generally not worth it because I've heard cases where guns have been stuck in customs for over 6 months. The hoops you have to jump through and the red tape you have to deal with is horrendous. I wouldn't recommend it. And finally, an email from one of our lovelorn listeners, Hank. He says, Johnny, I'd like to present to you and your listeners a stark case of Latin American gender inequality. He says, I've been going on those Latin Cupid dating sites. And get this, he says, guys, men, males, have to pay a monthly fee to stay on the thing. Oh, you can get on them all right for free, but if you want to actually contact the girls, you know, write text messages back and forth and such, as soon as you try to do that, you get a pop-up window that says, sorry, this is a premium paid service. To sign up for premium service, you have to pay $5.99 a month. So I did, and I found out through communicating with the ladies, they don't have to pay a cent. How is that possible? Why aren't the feminists all over this? Signed, Hank. P.S. Love the show, Johnny, and I haven't hooked up with any Latinas yet, just testing the waters for my future plan B. I'm in Minnesota. All right, Hank, thanks for that. And it doesn't surprise me because you'll find when you get down here to Latin America, the feminist movement is very small and most Latinos don't call themselves feminists. Things like equal pay and glass ceilings are not issues down here, not yet. They've got much bigger fish to fry, like spousal abuse and general physical abuse of women. Sort of an epidemic down here. Because so many Latin ladies, and you'll hear this all the time, especially from emergency room doctors, get beaten up by their husbands and boyfriends. Bottom line, like most things here in Latin America, there's lag time. Feminism's about 30 years behind what it is up in the States and the rest of the first world, which to us means they haven't gone off the deep end yet. In other words, you better not ask a Latina to split the check on a date. That'd be the kiss of death.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.